The following is the Vyasa Puja lecture given by His Holiness Ravindra Prabhu on his appearance day, August 4, 2001, in Philadelphia.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Kinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivishesha Sunyavari Paschachade Satarane Om Angyanam Timuram Dasya Gananjana Shulakaya Chaksuram Militum Jainam Tasmay Sri Garve Namaha Panchakal Patrubhyastha Kripasandeva Cha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, once again, I would like to thank all of you. I know you come together to honor your spiritual master, and I have to think you come together so that I can pay my respects to you at least once a year, because I very much appreciate your service and your dedication. I get a chance to see it a little bit here. All I'm trying to do is something to satisfy Srila Prabhupada. That's a fact. In one sense, my life is really very, very simple. I think one of the good things I got from my material upbringing was a very obsolete sense of duty. And my father was a career officer in the military, and maybe the military, certainly the military isn't what it used to be, but at least this idea of duty was very, very strong. And this is almost a sort of archaic upbringing I had. I once got in trouble in high school. I happened to be living in a place where there was not very many military people around. And so this high school I went to, they didn't know people like me. And my ninth grade algebra teacher asked me to do something. I said, "Yes, sir." And finally he called me aside and wondered why I was being sarcastic. I was always saying yes sir and no sir, you know. I had explained to him, you know, look, I'm not being sarcastic at all. He just couldn't imagine that somebody would say something like that with a straight face, but it was me, I was really square. anyway, I did have this real concept of duty and of accepting authority and following authority. And so when I encountered Krishna consciousness and looked at in some ways is a very, very complicated process to choose between Krishna and Maya. And many philosophical issues were there between, on the one hand, Krishna consciousness as Prabhupada presented it, sort of one complete whole, organic, seamless package. And the other was another complete whole, organic, seamless package, which was modern view of the world, I guess. And I saw I was in a position where I had to sort of decide one or the other. And I discovered that anytime I could get a reason for just choosing one or the other, that reason itself only was valid within one of those two frameworks, and I couldn't find any outside framework. So then I realized it was an act of faith, And it was just a question ultimately, whose authority was I going to accept? Either I was going to surrender to Prabhupada, at least there's one person who personified for me, you know, this tradition he was bringing, or some anonymous somebody else who was representing the other thing. And so I decided that in one sense it was a no-brainer. I mean, I looked at these people and I looked at Prabhupada. Who do you want to be like, you know? So I just decided that I would accept Srila Prabhupada's authority and surrender to that authority, and that's just as simple as that, really. And that meant there's a lot of things Prabhupada said and did that I couldn't understand, didn't make sense to me, or that even put me in a bit of a panic. Because when I wrote to him for suggestions on writing a doctoral dissertation, he suggested I could defeat Darwin. And that was breathtaking. The only piece of persons I ever met who were against Darwin were these born again Christians from Lawton, Oklahoma, and El Paso, Texas. But I thought, well, yeah, okay, that's what he says. This was just to accept Prabhupada's authority, and I have to say that sort of attitude that I got had was finally paid off when you may know that one time we had this political party, the In God We Trust party for purified leaders. And there was a short period of time in ISKCON where it was really the cutting edge of ISKCON preaching. It's now a forgotten chapter. There were five of us running for office. I was running for second congressional district here in Philadelphia. The temple was like my campaign headquarters. Devotees were going out collecting signatures to get me on the ballot as a, had to get 1500 signatures or something to register as a third party candidate. So we got enough signatures actually to register as a candidate, and there was this magazine that was coming out called The New World Harmonist, where we would, you know, with Bhagavatam in one hand and Newsweek magazine in the other. Used to call it Newsweek Purana. Analyze the current issues of the day, you know. And Prabhupada was talking about it all the time. We were really studying, you know, how Maharaj Pariksit received the age of Kali. And so, and our whole temple was, this was the whole thing. Anyway, some problems developed in the course of time. I don't know exactly what all of them were. But one of them was that according to United States law, a religious organization can't engage directly in politics. And if we were going to really have a political campaign, it couldn't be the temple. And you know, otherwise, this gun would lose its tax-exempt status. And so things are being complicated. And I guess other things were happening, too. And just out of the... So, we'll deal with these problems. And out of the blue, I got this letter from Srila Prabhupada, saying he wanted all the political preaching stopped immediately. And he said something about we cannot have separate men, equipment, and endeavors, and so on. So please stop all the political preaching. So I got together devotees in the temple and I said, we have to stop. People were really crushed. Yeah. And I was amazed because the way Prabhupada was turning on a dime, you know, just like, phew. It's like 1 minute is like the full court press on this thing, and then all of a sudden just stopped, you know. And I was just amazed how Prabhupada just dropped it. He just made a decision and he dropped it. So I explained to the devotees we had to stop doing it. And we had some discussions, and And so then I wrote back to Prabhupada, you know, saying we've stopped all the political preaching, and sent him some pictures of our Jagannath deities, those are our deities at the time, and invited him to Rath Yatra. This is 74. Invited him to the Philadelphia Rath Yatra. And I got back this wonderful letter from Srila Prabhupada that began, "Thank you 1,000 times for the wonderful way you're worshiping Lord Jagannath there in Philadelphia." And then he said, you know, how he used to worship Jagannath as a child, and now he's so happy that his Western disciples are doing it. And then, you know, "Thank you again," you know, a letter like that from Prabhupada. I was amazed at this letter. And then he said, I can't come to Rath Yatra this year, but I will be there next year, 75. And then he came. He came in 75, even though so many people tried to stop him. Because it turned out there was a conflict between a big Radha Damodar deity installation after the Chicago Rath Yatra and the Philadelphia Rath Yatra, who was going to San Francisco, Chicago and Philadelphia. So in Chicago, they were going to have the Rath Yatra, and then they were going to install all these Gordon Chai deities to go onto the Radha Damodar traveling party buses. And so people started to call me up and say, from Chicago and Radha Damodar, say, "You know, Prabhupada's not going to come to Philadelphia because he's going to stay here, you know, Tamal Krishna Goswami." But because I had this letter from Prabhupada, I was quite convinced he was going to come into Philadelphia, he promised. And he really surprised everybody by leaving Chicago and not staying for the installation, coming to Philadelphia. So I always kind of wondered about it, and then a few years later I ran across Satsrup Maharaj, who was his secretary at the time, and he explained to me that what had happened is that Prabhupada had sent the letter out telling the other people in this party to please stop all the preaching, and that the letters that he was getting back were all something, "Well, maybe we can try this, Prabhupada, or maybe we can try that, or can't we do it like this," and, you know. And he was getting a little upset, and he got my letter saying, "I've stopped," just a plain and simple thing. And he was so happy that somebody just did what he asked. But that's what prompted this letter. And he saw the pictures of the deities. He says, "Yes, this is our real business, you know, but it's such a Maharaj." So it paid off. So it's really a simple thing. I mean, unfortunately, the thing about the sense of duty is sometimes it can be misplaced. Like, for example, my father. if he had had the same sense of duty toward God as he had toward the United States government, he'd be much more successful in his human form of life. But the principle is there. One, unfortunately, people are misled as to what the authorities are. But the principle is very good, and so my principle is that I'm not on the mental platform about following Srila Prabhupada, and it's a fact is that nothing good would have come out of my life without Srila Prabhupada, so I owe him. And the other thing that I had realized about Srila Prabhupada is just how much trouble he took to come to the West. And I have to say that it was for me. Not just me, but me. I'm the one that needed him. I was sitting around thinking what's going to happen, and on the brink of despair, thinking, "Wow, maybe I'll have to go to India." One of those guys wandering around from one bogey yogi ashram to the next, you know, getting ripped off. And then suddenly, here was Krishna consciousness in this little row house in West Philadelphia. How'd that happen? And it was the trouble Srila Prabhupada took. He wasn't the only one to get this order. Bhaktisiddhanta had distributed this order to all his leading men, and Srila Prabhupada actually was not a leader in his movement. Prabhupada was a householder. He was a guy off on the side somewhere. But somehow or other, nobody else did it. They didn't. And Prabhupada did. He took that his duty to his spiritual master. He understood. He says from reading Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary on Pyavasatmika Buddhi verse, what his duty was. And he did it. So when I could see how Prabhupada was operating with relation to his spiritual master, that sense of duty, and Prabhupada said, this is the secret of success, you know, I clicked. I felt I could understand this. This is nothing very complicated, nothing very metaphysical, or nothing very difficult to understand. The one simply has to execute the orders of the spiritual master. There's vows that one's taken, there's obligations that one has. Obligation means I owe Srila Prabhupada. I see what trouble he took for me, and I think much more than I ever have to undergo. Prabhupada left us a lot more, I think, than when Prabhupada tried to preach Krishna consciousness. The work that Bhaktisiddhanta did was not so helpful anymore. Prabhupada had to do it all by himself. You know, somehow or other, we've made some advancement. And when Prabhupada left, there's still an intact institution. And although this institution gives us trouble, just like the kind of cars I drive, they give trouble. But I need the car, and ultimately, it's worth the trouble. If I had to go on foot, life would be a lot rougher. So the same way, ISKCON is a source of difficulty. But oh boy, we'd be so much worse off without it. And somebody would have to start over again from scratch. It's just a framework for cooperation and getting things done. So Prabhupada left us all that, so I'm really in a much better position. And he preached in a way. This movement has gone on. And one interesting thing is that my relationship with my grand spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and your relationship with your grand spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, is a little different. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did not much participate in my formation of Krishna consciousness. Everything we got was from his disciple, from Srila Prabhupada. But now Prabhupada has written so many books and established this institution, so he is participating in everyone's spiritual life in a much more active way manifestly active way than Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was in ours. Once when one of these devotees went to one of the early pilgrimages to Mayapur, people went to visit the yoga pit, and they had these book stalls there, and everybody came back with all these Bhaktisiddhanta works in English. And Prabhupada was a little upset, and he was quoted as saying, he's my spiritual master, not yours. Then I can see, you know, I see all these people with his books, you know, I could understand they'd read two paragraphs and quit. So Bhaktisiddhanta was not quite as accessible to us. But Srila Prabhupada has made himself accessible to so many generations. Because of his books, I knew when I first looked like I was going to take up the service of being a spiritual master, that really I had to have the capacity to follow Prabhupada's instructions and teach his books. I knew I was not qualified to write them, but I knew I could teach them. And but where would I be without those books, or any of us? So what Prabhupada has given us is there's been some advance over the course of time, and the legacy is building up. So even though we have ups and downs and difficulties and obstacles to overcome, Lord Chaitanya's movement is picking up steam. It's building up. It's going on very nicely. And I just want to go on serving Srila Prabhupada, and I want to see other people serve Srila Prabhupada. And so it makes me very happy when I see all of you doing something to offer this Krishna consciousness movement. Each of us has something to offer, and what we have to offer right now may be quite latent, we can't see it, but actually it's quite precious. And if we put ourselves into the purifying process of Krishna consciousness, Krishna will bring it out. And what each person has to offer, each soul has to offer, is unique. The word unique means one of a kind. It's going to be different from what anybody else has, because we're individuals. And that offering is our offering of love to Krishna. And Krishna wants to relish that offering by becoming purified, and under the guidance of the previous charyas, undergoing the process of Krishna consciousness, what's there latent, it can be perfected, so it's fit for being offered to Krishna and for pleasing Krishna. And this way, the ocean of bliss increases. We can actually add to Krishna's happiness. We can make a contribution, because Krishna is always increasing. That's the Nesh Sankirtan movement. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. That means Krishna's bliss. And so we want to Saint Augustine gave this definition of love. He says love means to want the other to be. But when I think about that definition in relation to Krishna, it's not just as you want Krishna to be. Yes, Krishna, you're God, and I'm happy that you're God. I want you to be God. But also, we want Krishna to be more and more what he is. We want him to go on increasing. You're the supreme enjoyer, and I want you to enjoy more and more. So we should have this idea of adding to Krishna's happiness by our devotional service. And when Krishna happiness increases, then also our happiness will increase. Well, this is what is going on in spiritual life. So we have that opportunity. So we shouldn't deprive Krishna of the gift we have. But that's what the jivas are for. The jivas are there to give Krishna happiness. We should be generous. We shouldn't be miserly. We should see what we can do to please Krishna, and I think we'll be amazed at what we can do. And so somehow or other, when somebody like Prabhupada picks us up, we may be this big chunk of coal, but somehow it puts us under the pressure of Krishna consciousness, and the diamond comes out. So we have this potential. So Krishna becomes more beautiful, and all the devotees also, they shine beautifully in the company of Krishna. And that's, we want to see that go on more and more and more without any end. And if we get some inkling of that, of what we're called to do, the hassles and the problem of the material world are not significant at all. You know, this is not even a bump in the road. I feel very, very obligated to you because of your help and your insistence, your encouragement, your enthusiasm, I can go on and do something for Krishna. And I think that the next generation, I can see that the people that are coming this move in the next generation, I think they're better than my generation. The potential for increasing the ocean of transcendental bliss is going on and on and on. And so I'd like to see all of you be everything you can be, I'm sorry. become what you really are, give pleasure to Krishna, and in that way give pleasure to all of Krishna's devotees. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki.